Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my absolute pleasure to have as my guest, Nick Gaylord. Nick has had a very interesting journey to get to this point. He's always been driven by a desire to help others. He thought as a child he was initially going to become a math teacher, but life took him down a different path. He has spent nearly three decades in the pharmaceutical industry, working in quality assurance and document control. Nick, better you than me, because that's something that I could not do for about 5 minutes, much less three decades. But his passion for having a meaningful impact hasn't wavered, and it is taking him down a path of service, which he has done through mentoring other individuals who want to become grief workers and have experienced trauma, holding a great space through his podcast for individuals to share their stories. He held a great space for me, it was late last year, where I appeared on his podcast, and we had a great conversation. So it's kind of led us to this point. And I got to say, initially, Nick, how we met was through another grieving parent by the name of Jason Tuttle. Jason got us all together on Facebook Messenger. I think it was you, me, Faith Sage, Tanya Manley, all great podcasters, grief workers. And we kind of came together as kind of an impromptu community. I think we've been on each other's podcast. We've connected on different levels, and it just proves that, you know, you never know when the people that are necessary to come into your life are going to come into your life. But when they do, it's great. So with that, Nick, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for quite a while now.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's such a pleasure to be here. And it's so good to see you again. I've really been looking forward to this as well. I loved having you on my show, on Our Dead Dads podcast. Definitely one of my favorite interviews that I've recorded. And now I'm thrilled to be here. And yeah, I'm excited.
Good. I'm glad I didn't scare you away as a guest, that you were willing to come on my podcast as a guest.
Oh, it's going to take a lot more than that to scare me off.
I got that impression. So, and I think we got along. You're a Mets fan. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. I'm a Mets fan. Yep. I am going to get a lot of crap for this. I understand that. I'm also a Yankees fan. I am a New York baseball fan. First and foremost, I'm a Mets fan. But I also love the Yankees. But like last weekend or this past weekend when they played the Subway Series, I was all Mets. And my wife she's thrilled to support the Mets for me. And she loved the Mets growing up too. But she is diehard Yankees. So, of course, it was a Subway Series, even though we're in Tampa, even though we're not in New York anymore. Yeah. She was in her glory Sunday night when the Yankees had a 6-run eighth inning. Just sitting there like, you guys want to let me pitch? And it was brutal to watch.
Yeah. As a Yankees fan, I enjoyed watching that, but I don't wish any ill will on the Mets, but I always want the Yankees to beat the Mets during the Subway Series.
Totally understand and respect that.
I like both the Giants and the Bills. I'm more of a Bills fan than a Giants fan, but I root for both. So I got kind of like the mirror image of who I root for in football as you do in baseball. So,
right. No, totally understand that. I'm a big Giants fan. I have no issue with the Bills. Just let's not talk about the Jets in this house.
Yeah, that's probably a good practice. So
that's right.
And I think with that, now that we've done the sports report, we've got everybody up to date on the Tri-County area sports. Let's get into some of the questions that I have for you.
Let's do it.
Let's just go see where this is going to go. Tell our listeners about the specific experience that you've had that have contributed to your life path and your life passions.
I have always had it ingrained in me that I've wanted to help people. When I was a kid, before I wanted to be a math teacher, I wanted to be a meteorologist. I just always had a love for weather. That's one of the things that I got a love of from my dad. Even though I've known for my entire life that I always had a gift with numbers, I don't know where it comes from. I think a little bit actually came from my dad. I can't explain it. Not quite on Rain Man level, but it's pretty impressive when I get going. But I've always had a love for numbers, and I've always had a burning desire to help people. And when being a meteorologist, I knew that wasn't going to happen. I definitely wanted to fall back on my second preference, which was being a math teacher. I really figured that out in college. There was, I think it was pre-calc I was taking. And to be fair, I spent my first 2 years right after high school at State University of New York in Albany. And then didn't have the best grade-wise experience up there, we'll say. And I ended up taking a bit of a break, came home, just started working. And then a few years later, I went back to school at a community college back on Long Island, got back into it. So, of course, it had been probably about 5 years or so since I had taken a math class. And they wanted me to start back a little bit. So I started with pre-calc, and I was basically sleeping through the class and acing it. I was getting 100+ on every test because there's extra credit questions that he was giving. And before long, I started tutoring a couple of the students in the class. And by the time I got to the final, I was tutoring probably more than half the class because a lot of them were just struggling. I don't know why, whether it was the content or the professor, a lot of people were struggling. And everybody knew that I was really doing well. So, hey, can you help me out? Can you tutor me? So we would just meet up in the library. And I think probably every night for 2 or 3 hours for the week before the final, I was in there helping them all. And everybody passed. Didn't necessarily all get A's, but everybody passed the final. At least everybody that I was working with, everybody passed the class. It was mission accomplished. And there were a few of the students that said, you should really be teaching this. And I said, yeah, I think that's definitely what I was kind of leaning toward, but I was like, yeah, I need to do this. It didn't work out. I had to take a few courses that I was not so good in. Calc 1 was no problem. Calc 2, I struggled. I think I had a C+ in that course. And then I got to Calc 3 and I was lost. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And the thing that frustrated me the most is that the New York State education curriculum at the time, I don't know what it's like now, but we're talking like 25 years ago, required a whole list of courses for me to get a degree in education and teach math. I wanted to teach junior high school math. Like, what the hell do I need to teach? What do I need to learn Calc 3 if I'm going to teach eighth grade? But that's what New York State said, and I knew that it was not going to happen. So, unfortunately, that dream died too. I finished my degree, but I knew that I was not going to be a math teacher. So, by that point, I was already probably 5 or 6 years deep into my career in pharmaceutical, quality assurance, document control. So, I said, all right, let's see where this goes. I really never thought it was going to turn into a career. If you had told me 25 years ago that I would still be doing quality assurance in whether pharma, clinical trials, or medical device, biotech, I would have laughed, especially if you had said that it would have taken us out of New York into Texas and then into Florida. But you don't always end up with the plan that you figured on when you were younger. And this industry has been very good to me. I love this field. I don't know why I got into it so hard. I'm very detail-oriented. I think that's a big part of why quality assurance is good for me. I know you said that you probably couldn't do it for 5 minutes, and it doesn't mean that you're not detail oriented. It's just, it's not for everybody. I've worked with a lot of people that have tried this, and some have done amazing, and some just like, I can't do this. What are we doing here? They're just bored, or they're just driven crazy by it. It's always just come so naturally to me. I've embraced it. I've loved it, and I've made a career out of it. So yeah, that's where I've been for so long. The thing that took me toward podcasting was actually the beginning of last year, the beginning of 2024. I started the year unemployed. I was previously on a almost 2-year contract with my last company. And then I knew that the contract was going to end at the end of 2023. They were doing cutbacks and it wasn't going to happen. So I couldn't find anything right away. I started the year unemployed. Trying to apply for jobs, reach out to recruiters, do everything I could to get another job. And also trying to figure out what to do to keep myself busy. Because after the first few weeks of sending out a billion resumes, contacting all the recruiters, I'm on all their radars. They know I'm looking for a job in, you know, everybody else, get all the projects done around the house. Then I'm like, all right, I need something to keep myself busy because I'm going to start climbing the walls. I'm going to start driving Kim crazy, and I don't need to do that. A friend of mine that I worked with at my previous job had been talking about starting her own podcast. Now, completely different from what I was doing, but just the fact that she wanted to start a podcast. So we're talking about it, and she said, you know, you should start a podcast. I'm like, what am I going to talk about? What does anybody want to listen to me talk about? She said, just think about it. All right, so I think about it, and of course, once you get a bug in your ear, it's hard to get it out. So I started thinking about it, started doing a little bit of research, ended up taking a podcasting class. It was a 10-week class through Zoom, about 2 hours each class. And I immediately knew that I wanted to talk about grief because grief is something I've dealt with personally. And I've also been there to deal with for a lot of other people. Over the course of many years, there have been a lot of people that have just come up to me, some expectedly, some unexpectedly, and just said, hey, can we chat? I need to get some stuff off my chest. I just need to talk to somebody for a few minutes. Yeah, no problem. Let's chat. And not really knowing a lot of the times where the conversations were going to go, but the end result, the common denominator was that they always helped. The person that I was talking to always said at the end of the conversation, thank you so much. This really helped. It doesn't mean that the conversation was over, you know, for them, for us, whatever, but starting it was so important. And for a lot of them, that was the start of their conversation. They didn't know who to talk to. They didn't know how to talk. They just came up to me and said, hey, can I bend your ear for a few minutes? And so, of course, I'm loving helping people. Of course, I'm going to say yes. And so when it came to grief, I thought about it and I realized that everybody has a grief story. So whether anybody wants to talk about it or admit it or not, we all have that in common. I wanted something that was going to be impactful, something that a lot of people could relate to. So that's why I chose grief. I didn't want to jump into creating a podcast in one of the popular genres, you know, sports, politics, religion, true crime, anything like that. I didn't want that. Yes, it probably could have been easier to get a big following, maybe cause a little controversy, regardless of which one of those I jumped into, but I didn't necessarily want that. I really wanted to help people, and I knew grief was the way to go. So I started it, and I immediately knew that I was going to call it Our Dead Dads. Now, that comes from a community that I have kind of built over a camaraderie and basically a family of consisting of some family, three of my three younger brothers, and I also have three very close friends that I've known since I was about 11, who I always say they're not my friends, they are my brothers. I've known these guys for almost my entire life. The seven of us have a lot of things in common. One of them is that our dads are all dead. So the term Our Dead Dads kind of became a joke between us that, you know, we were able to joke about things. We were able to use humor and sometimes dark humor, because when you have that type of a relationship with somebody, a lot of people will use that, whether it's to make conversation easier, a little bit of deflection, a little bit of both. I think we can all relate that when we have a really close relationship with somebody, we can let our guard down. We can pull back the curtain a little bit more than we would in most other situations. So that's just what we've always had. We always give each other an endless amount of crap, and we're also always there for each other. But I knew it was going to be about grief. I knew it was going to be called Our Dead Dads. So that's what I did. I just started doing interviews. I just started planning for it. I got the logo done. I got the music done. I think I recorded probably 10 or 12 interviews before I published the first one. And I made episode one, me telling my story, not because I am in love with the sound of my own voice, but I knew that if I was going to ask people to talk about some of the most uncomfortable things in their lives, I should probably let everybody know that I'm willing to do this with them. I'm going to jump in to the deep end. We're going to rip off the swimmies. We're going to do this together. So I didn't want this to seem like do as I say, not as I do. I wanted everybody to know that we are all in this together. So that's why episode one was about me. Episode two was my three brothers. Episode three was my three friends. Episode four was my wife. And then after that, we just got onto the rest of the guests. This is something that has definitely changed my life, all in good ways. I never thought I'd be doing a podcast. And then I start the groundwork for it early last year. launched it in June, coming up to the 1 year anniversary. Actually, this morning, just dropped episode 50. So huge milestone there. And I'm loving everything that I get to do. I've had some really, really powerful interviews. As we said before, you have been on my podcast. Our friend Jason has, Jason Tuttle, he's been on, creator of Letters to Zachary. Faith Sage has been on. Tanya Manley has not yet. We've had a couple of delays, but she is going to be on very soon. Who knows? Maybe by the time this drops, she will have been on. I've had a lot of interviews with people who the general public wouldn't know, and I love that because I'm trying to show that I'm not necessarily looking for the big names. I'm looking for everybody. Joe listener or Jane listener. I want the average people with the incredible stories. I want people who are willing to talk. And I also want people who may not be willing to talk yet, but are willing to come in and listen. Because not everything's about telling your own story. A lot of people aren't ready for that. So you come in, and as I tell the listeners, if you're not ready to talk, that's cool. Just come in and listen. Just listen to a couple of episodes. And I say, if this isn't for you, no harm, no foul, no offense taken, because this isn't for everybody. This is not a sexy topic. This is a really intense topic to talk about. And at the same time, if people are willing to listen, then I think that they're going to realize that they have a lot of things in common with almost all of the guests. It doesn't have to be the type of story, the type of grief or trauma or loss that they have experienced, because in 50 episodes, we have covered so much. We've covered parents, losing parents. We've covered losing spouses, losing children, losing siblings, pretty much any kind of loss. Some of the bigger interviews I've had were interviewing Gabby Petito's parents. That was about 3 months ago. Her mom and her stepdad, who also her bonus dad, is what we call him, because Gabby grew up with four parents. Her parents had kind of separated young, and then they both got married. So Gabby always grew up with four parents. So I got to interview her mom and bonus dad, and I'm actually going to see them all in a couple of weeks in New York. I'm going up for a charity golf event for the Gabby Petito Foundation in New York, because we're all originally from New York. So that's going to be amazing. I also got to interview two Sandy Hook parents, two parents who lost their child back in December 2012 at the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Connecticut. Robbie Parker was episode number 40. He lost his daughter, Emily. Also Scarlett Lewis, who lost her son, Jesse, and has since created the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Foundation, the Choose Love Movement. Intensely powerful episodes and conversations and just amazing people. Everybody, the guest that everybody knows, the guest that nobody knows, everybody's so down to earth and so willing to just be part of this. And Dave, I got to tell you, I've never felt so included and so welcomed into a community that I had not previously been part of, as I have been made to feel in the last year plus in the grief community. This truly is a community. It's a family. Everybody is in this together. And I don't know. I'm sure I'd be fine being busy with work and everything else that I was doing before this, but this doing this podcast and I think yours is number 16 or 17 that I have interviewed on, aside from my own podcast. It's changed my perspective. It's changed the way that I hold space for somebody who is in grief, who has a story. I mean, I always felt like I was trying to do good things before, but since then, it's so different. I've learned so much, and it's constantly a work in progress. This is an education. It is a community, and I'm so glad and grateful and proud to be part of it and to have everybody welcome me into it.
And obviously you're doing some very impactful work, but you know, a couple of things stuck out as you were talking. First of all, like you said, the universe has a plan that doesn't necessarily align with ours, but when we think we have a plan, I always say the universe says, hold my beer. You know, if you think you have a plan, here's my plan. And you
absolutely
know, we have free will to walk down whatever path the universe reveals for us, or we can choose not to. But I'm glad you did, because that set the groundwork for you creating space to have very meaningful conversations with individuals who have experienced their worst tragedy. And whatever that worst tragedy is, whether it's the loss of a child, a sibling, we need to meet people at their worst tragedy. And obviously, yes, you've been able to do that with the variety of guests that you've had. The other thing that I think gets understated, if you're going to do a podcast about grief and you want individuals to become comfortable sharing their story and talking about a topic that is, for the most part, still taboo in many parts of Western society, you better be damn willing to share your own story with those individuals. You need to be able to show that you're vulnerable, to show that you're willing to talk about a topic that is maybe it was uncomfortable for you at some point, but is necessary to talk about. In my death, dying, and bereavement class that I teach at Utica University, my students know my entire lossography, including, and I call it the transition of my daughter, Janine, to a new existence. They are very upfront with that. I am very upfront with that. And the reason is, my goal with them, and I tell them up front, is I want you to be comfortable talking about a topic that many in Western society are not comfortable addressing. If they don't see that I'm willing to do it, they're not going to. And the other thing is, the stories that you've heard from, you know, the Scarlett Lewis's and Gabby Petito's parents, the stories that I've heard from a variety of different individuals, they enrich me. They inspire me. What it also tells me is that they trust me enough to share one of the most intimate details of their lives with me. And they trust the space that I've created either in the classroom or created in the podcast forum to do that. And I think you're right. I mean, this is a topic that, you know, if you want to get a lot of clicks, you want to get a lot of downloads, you could talk about something that's a lot sexier than grief. But these are the conversations that we need to have. These are the conversations that it's not so much in terms of what the experience of grief was like. And trust me, that is a big part of it, but it's how did you get through grief? How did you work through grief? What did you learn? What tools do you have that you can share with others that can inspire them to work through grief? If we can do that in any platform that we create or any community that we create, our legacies are going to be well preserved.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not trying to do this to become famous. If it happens in the process, okay. But that's not what I'm aiming for. I'm aiming to reach as many people as I possibly can, and I'm trying to help as many people as I possibly can. And something you said is so dead on about how your guests need to trust you when you're talking about these kind of topics. That's why I have intro calls with everybody. You and I did it, and I've done it. I think maybe I've had two guests where I didn't do an intro call because I just didn't have, there wasn't time. Their schedule's crazy. And so, you know, we kind of emailed back and forth, but then we did the interview and they were incredible. But generally, I have intro calls with everybody because I want to, and I also have, you know, be a guest form that I have everybody fill out in advance. And I do that because I want to make sure that we're on the same page about what we're going to talk about. But I also do it to get an understanding of the position that somebody is coming to me from. Mm-hmm. And the information that I'm receiving, there's a saying that information is power, and it is. And this topic that we're talking about, and specifically these details, these very personal, intimate details that people are sharing with me, this is powerful stuff. And it is not something that I take lightly at all. This is a great honor to be able to hold space for somebody in their grief. It is a privilege, and it's also a huge responsibility. It is something that if you're going to talk to somebody else about their grief, you need to know what you're getting into. You need to take it entirely seriously. Now, I'll say entirely seriously with a small grain of salt, because as I've mentioned before on my show, and as I've told other podcasters, I like to incorporate humor and sometimes even dark humor into my story and into the podcast. I did an interview earlier today. There was plenty of that. I mean, there's plenty of a grief story too, but we had an absolute blast in the conversation that we had. Not all of the conversations are like that. Some of them are going to be really sad, really dark, kind of morbid, but we also try to come back and work some humor into it. And that's also why I do a series of random questions at the end of every interview, because I try to lighten things up a little bit. I don't want to just leave on, all right, well, now we've just depressed the hell out of each other, so, you know, have a good night. I don't want to end like that. I did the random questions with my very first interview with my brothers just to see, and it went over pretty well. And I was like, you know, let me give this a shot. And it's something that has stuck ever since, and it's now a regular part of every single episode. It's a it's a real responsibility. It's something that you have to take seriously if you're going to hold space for somebody. You don't have to know everything about grief. You don't even have to know everything about the person's story. You have to be willing to be present in the entire conversation. You have to be willing to be vulnerable yourself, because the person who's telling you the information is making themselves vulnerable. But the vulnerability comes from both sides. And by the way, vulnerability is a very attractive trait. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't understand that. Like, they think that if I'm vulnerable, I'm showing weakness. You're not. Anybody within the sound of our voices who is listening to this conversation, if you have a story to talk about, it doesn't just have to be about grief. If it's anything that's uncomfortable, you have to understand that putting yourself out there, yes, you're making yourself vulnerable, but the rewards far outweigh the risks. Well, there's not much risk. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to feel like you're embarrassing yourself? No, you're not embarrassing yourself. You are helping yourself, and you're helping so many other people in the process.
And you know, the thing that is mistaken about vulnerability, you know, is that people think if I'm going to be vulnerable, I'm going to get hurt. And a lot of that is because of past history and past trauma that where they've shared very intimate details with somebody, their trust got violated. So therefore, sure, they just closed off and said, I'm not going to be vulnerable anymore. But vulnerability means that I'm in a situation with you. I feel safe. I have good rapport with you. And I'm thinking, it does not imply that we're ever going to be friends again. It does not imply that we're going to have a long-term relationship. What this says is that I trust you enough in this moment that you're going to get me through that moment.
And that's exactly right.
And that's what vulnerability boils down to. I look at vulnerability as having a series of transient angels come into our view for that particular moment, help us get through a very trying time. And I'll give you an example for me. After my daughter transitioned, I was teaching at Utica University. I had been away from teaching for a week. I needed a week to get through the funeral arrangements and just everything else. But it was a semester, semester course. I did not want my students to get that far behind. So somehow I dragged my behind to Utica University. It was Utica College at the time. It's Utica University now, to do a 3-hour class. And I'm sitting in the continuing education office, Nick, thinking to myself, how the hell am I going to do a 3-hour class a week after burying my child?
Yeah.
At that moment, or shortly thereafter, the chairperson of the psychology department at that time, he came into the office and he said, Dave, I just want to let you know how sorry I am about your daughter. My heart warmed that he remembered, and I got through that class. I didn't see him again for another 8 years, but when I did, I told him what that moment of compassion, that gesture of compassion, how that got me through a moment I didn't think I was going to be capable of getting through. Yeah. And the other thing you mentioned about ending the podcast with kind of like a light question, you know, it's like when they do critical incident debriefing, one of the last questions they may ask is, what has been the dumbest thing that you've heard said to you since this event occurred? And it gives individuals an opportunity to really lean into things that are in the what were you thinking category, asking me this question, kind of lightens the mood a little bit. And you want to do that to end it on a lighter note, because you know, you've unveiled and you've uncovered a lot of intense emotions.
Yeah.
And with the previous questions and the previous 55 minutes or an hour, 2 hours, however long that debriefing lasted.
Yeah, I didn't really plan the random questions too far in advance. It was actually something that I thought of probably about a half an hour before I did the interview with my brothers. And I figured, let me just have some questions ready. Yeah. Never, who knows? It actually went pretty well. And like I said, I just kept on doing it. And I didn't do it initially to try to lighten the mood. I just did it to just have a little bit of fun. Yeah. And then I realized that it was actually accomplishing both goals. Yeah. It was fun to do these things because they're just completely random. I mean, I've got an Excel list with hundreds of questions, shuffle them every time, and I never know what's going to come up. But it also does, it lightens the mood, because we really are talking about some intense stuff. And it's nice to end on a lighter note. You don't always have to end with horrible death and despair and horrible information. It's not all doom and gloom. This is not a podcast that is just about horrible conversations. And that's something that needs to be understood by anybody who is listening, is going to listen. Yeah, it's called Our Dead Dads. And yes, we are talking about death and grief and loss and trauma and all of those things and how we got past them or how we haven't gotten past them and ways that any of the guests can offer advice to anyone who has been there or is currently going through it now. It all comes together because this is a community. We really are all a family. So anything that I could do to kind of lighten the mood, to bring it all together, to bring everything full circle, I'm going to do. And again, I didn't intend to do that way in the beginning. And I've realized that it's very necessary. And I love that I started it unintentionally, almost by accident. And it's become a huge part of the show. A lot of guests come into the show knowing that they're going to get them. And a few people have said, it's time for the questions yet. I want the random questions. I love that. It creates a lot of fun for a podcast, which is otherwise not something that many people are going to look at as fun. You know, even talking about these topics that we are, a lot of people at the end of the show will frequently say, I had a good time, regardless of what we're talking about. Because it's not, like I said, it's not doom and gloom. It isn't all terrible things. Some of it is, but we also talk about how to get through that and to find your path through on the other side of the grief, how to figure out your journey through grief, or, you know, how can you help somebody else? What does grief after loss look like? Can you laugh again? Is it okay to laugh? Yes, hell yes, it's okay to laugh. Yeah. It's okay to live your life.
Well, I take grief out of the equation, Nick. Life isn't all about being happy 24/7. Happiness is one part of the emotional spectrum that we experience. But in reality, authenticity occurs because we're willing to hold space for the other emotions that aren't happiness. And we're willing also to mirror those emotions to others so that they can learn from that. And, so essentially I look at my life now as being this kind of mix of happiness, joy, sadness, sometimes yearning, longing. And what I experience at any one time may not be happiness, but hey, it works. And plus, I don't hang around with totally happy people anyway. I like to hang around with individuals who don't see just happiness as the begin-all, end-all, but see who they are emotionally, the entire emotional personality that they have as being a part of who they are. Because we can learn from everything that occurs, good or bad,
if we're willing to let ourselves learn.
Absolutely. Getting back to the podcast for a minute, what have your guests taught you about grief, loss, and trauma that you may not have even anticipated knowing going in?
They've taught me that it is all relevant. It is all important. It's something that everybody goes through. Doesn't matter what kind of walk of life you come from. Doesn't matter if it's your first time through grief or your 20th time through grief. Even if it's far from your first time, it's just as important to process it the 10th time or the 15th time or the 20th time as it is the first. And especially for the first time, if we all know somebody who has died, it's a simple fact. I mean, anybody over the age of probably 10, pretty much at this point in their life, knows somebody who has died. Especially as adults, we've all dealt with it. Sometimes people really close to us, sometimes not. It's important to know that you're not going to have it all figured out. Even if you work in the field, and I don't necessarily say that I work in the grief field. I do have a podcast that is, the foundation is grief. I didn't go to school for this, so I don't know that I can actually say that I work in this field beyond the podcast. I am learning as much as I can all the time about it, but it's important to understand how to process your own grief, and it's important to understand how to be there for somebody else's grief. I've learned some of the things that you shouldn't say to somebody who's grieving. One of my guests a while back, a gentleman by the name of Mark Lucero, who was actually introduced to me through friends of ours that we knew in Texas. We still know them, but we were basically neighbors in Texas. They saw the podcast and they introduced me to this gentleman. He wrote a book called What to Say When You Don't Know What to Say, Loving a Friend Through Grief. A If anybody's interested, you can go either on Amazon or you can go onto my website, ourdeaddads.com, go to the recommended book section, and you can pick up a copy of his book. It's probably a 2-hour read, and it's so powerful. And it's something that you'll probably read a couple of times. I've read it a couple of times. It teaches you some of the things not to say. It teaches you some of the things to say. I mean, I always knew what felt uncomfortable when I heard other people say it, but I didn't necessarily know a lot of the why behind it. And that's something that I've got to learn a lot about here in this space. I've learned that you can hold space for anybody. You just have to be willing to. It doesn't take a lot. You don't have to have a PhD or a master's or a bunch of different degrees to be able to hold grief conversation with somebody and to be able to hold space for them. You don't. You have to have a good heart. You have to have an open mind. You have to have ears and eyes that can be focused on the conversation in front of you and put your own crap to the side. You have to be willing to get uncomfortable because it's going to happen. That's something that a lot of people are not comfortable with grief. That's something that I've learned. People can't get out of their own way and still really don't understand why, especially when if we really want to help family or friends, you know, why wouldn't we want to do everything we can? But there's a lot of folks that just cannot bring themselves to be uncomfortable for somebody else, whether it's because they just don't want to, they don't know how to, a combination of both. Those are also things that we talk about at great length here. I've learned that you can do just about anything for anybody, and you can be just about anything for anybody. It just takes a little bit of will and determination and just, like I said, willingness to be uncomfortable for a little bit, because you're going to be.
Oh, yeah. And you have to be willing to be a companion and be present for an individual's what they're going to consider to be their worst nightmare. And we have to be able to provide a compassionate presence, be willing to listen, ask questions that are going to allow them to share with you, me, or if we're doing a podcast, our audiences, in terms of who that person was through their eyes, why that loss was so significant for them. We have to create a space for their story to unfold. And like you said, the story will come out numerous times over and over and over again. But each time that story comes out, they learn something different about their grief. They learn something different about themselves that they can apply moving forward. But we have to be patient, we have to be compassionate, and we have to be present in order for us to be able to create space for an individual to be comfortable, you know, sharing their stories with us. And I think a lot of what you said, and you know, a lot of what I tell individuals is that expect that relationships are going to change after loss. The people that you thought were going to step up don't. The people that you never thought were going to step up do. Don't focus on those people that aren't there. Focus on those people that are there, because those people that aren't there may end up coming around eventually, or they may never come around.
But, that's right.
But basically, a lot of times people just don't know how to be present for somebody's grief. They don't know what to say. They think they may have to fix it, offer a solution. And there's no fixing physical death. There's no fixing permanency. All we can do is be present and help that individual to the extent that they're going to let us help us. And it sometimes be directive. If you have a neighbor, that you know has experienced a loss, a lot of times their concentration levels may be so low, they may forget what they have in the refrigerator. They may have some type of biology experiment going in there because they haven't thought about eating. They haven't thought about going shopping. Knock on the door and just say, "Hey, Nick, I'm going to go shopping. What can I get you from the store? What do you need? Do you need chicken? Do you need meat? Do you need vegetables?" Then you start to think, well, geez, I haven't gone shopping. Yeah, here's my list. And that's a lot of times being directive and being present and being directive when we need to be is key to support individuals who are grieving.
Yeah, exactly. Go over, check on them, see if they need groceries, or sometimes don't even see if they need groceries. Bring them groceries. Bring them food, bring them a meal, go over and just do their laundry, clean their kitchen, you know, whatever it takes, wash their sheets. Who knows? There's so many things you can do. Don't ask too much of somebody who's in grief. Don't say, "What can I do for you?" Because at that point, then you're basically asking somebody who's dealing with a tremendous loss to make another decision. And they're not always ready to make a decision. So sometimes they don't necessarily need anything. Just, you know, sit there. If you need to just sit there in silence with them, sit there in silence. If they want to say something, they will say something. And by the way, if they do say something, let them. Whatever they say. Even if it's like, why are they saying this? Just let them say it. And if you want to help, say, I'm going to call you tomorrow, or I'm going to call you on Tuesday, or I'm going to stop by. Even if they say don't, do it anyway. If they're not ready to talk to you, they won't answer the phone or they won't answer the front door. Or maybe they will, and they say, you know, thanks, I appreciate it, but I'm just not ready yet. Then say, I'm going to call you in a couple of days. And by the way, if you say you're going to do something, make sure you do it. Don't leave it open-ended and don't say, let me know if you need something. Just say, I'm going to stop by on Tuesday. I'm going to stop by on Saturday. Come with a meal. Stop and get Burger King or McDonald's or Taco Bell or KFC or whatever it is that they like. Make a pan of lasagna or pick up whatever takeout food, Chinese or ramen or anything that they like. You know that they like something, pick it up and bring it to them. Show up at their front door and say, I brought food. And if they say, thank you, I'm not ready, then just give them the food and say, all right, I'm going to check on you a couple of days, get some rest, whatever it takes. Yeah. But if you say you're going to do something, make sure you follow through. And again, that's where it gets uncomfortable, because a lot of people aren't willing to even do that because they think, oh, the person's not ready, or, oh, I'm just going to upset them if I even mention the loss of this person or that person. By the way, when talking about a person who died, it's not taboo. It isn't something that the idea that you're going to make a person worse off by talking about the person that they just lost is not true. You're going to help, if anything, because they feel like if nobody's talking about them, then they feel like, oh my God, nobody's saying their name. Nobody's talking about them. Like, I don't want their memory to just disappear, but nobody's talking about them. Talk about them. If they're not ready to talk, they will say, I'm not ready. But you know what? Try. These are some of the things that are in that book, in What to Say When You Don't Know What to Say. There's so many things that I have learned that anybody can learn. We're not talking about rocket science here. All of the resources that I have acquired from all of my guests, they're on everybody's episode page. At the bottom of, you go to, everybody has their own page. At the bottom has all their links for their Facebooks and Instagram, their social media. If they've done any books, it's on there. Your book is on the website. Everybody's resources, whether it's a website or a book or a pamphlet or whatever, is listed on their episode page. And there's so much to offer. Everybody has so much to offer. And by the way, everybody who has been on my show has been so willing and said, yay, listen, listeners, if you need someone to talk to, contact me. Here's all my information.
Yeah.
It's an incredible community that we're part of.
It is, and our shared pain becomes a gateway to hope. And that's really...
Sure does.
That's really how I look at that as well. But yeah, you made a great number of really terrific points about community, about the importance of presence and listening, and being mindful of your words. One of the things that I've learned through my own challenges with grief is that I've learned what is insensitive, why it is insensitive, realize that I had said those things in the past before I confronted the worst tragedy in my life. And I'm very mindful of going into a situation, what I'm going to say, what questions am I going to ask, how do I want to be present? Because everybody's situation is different. Everybody's perception of the relationship they lost is different. Everybody's grief may be different depending on what, if there's a complicated nature with the relationship. It's all different. And you have to be mindful of how you go in, how you're present, and what you say, the type of questions that you ask, and the type of comfort that you give. A lot of times, if I don't have any words for it, I'll just say, I don't know what to say, but I'm present. I'm going to be here for however you need me to be here. And that is the biggest key, is that we don't always have to know what to say. Situations, words can't describe your feeling or even begin to encapsulate the situation of the person who is grieving. Essentially, he's just going, hey, I don't know what to say. And that's about as honest a reflection as you can give. If somebody said that to me, I would welcome them into my circle because they're being honest and they're being vulnerable.
Right. It's not going to always be a situation where you're going to know what to say. Even if you work in this field, even if you have suffered unimaginable loss like you have, and like all the other folks that we know have, it doesn't always prepare you. It doesn't always give you the answers. And some people might think, well, Dave, you buried your daughter, and Jason buried his son, and Tony buried her son. Faith has buried a child and a grandchild, and all the other people and all of their examples. So, well, you must know about this, right? It doesn't work like that. Sometimes it does, but it doesn't work like that. So just be there for each other. Just if you don't know what to say, it's okay. Even if you need to say, I'm so sorry, I don't know what to say. That's all right. Like you're being honest, you're being vulnerable. You're not trying to just put crap out there just to say, oh, well, at least they're not suffering anymore. It's for the best. And like, really? The shit that people say just to fill space, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
I have people in my family who do that, and it drives me up the wall.
Wow. I mean, most people, Nick, don't mean to be insensitive.
They don't mean to be insensitive, but there comes a point when you realize that you need to realize that you're being insensitive.
Yeah, I mean, basically that. You know, I mean, they, you know, usually if it's said with sincerity and warmth, you kind of figure, oh, the person doesn't know any better. And that may be a point where somebody, and there's a lot of emphasis now on teaching individuals, you know, just family members, friends, how to hold space for somebody who's grieving. That would be something that would be a good point of a teaching moment, a conversation. Say, look, you know, your intention was good.
Yeah.
This is why it didn't work.
And, yeah.
And, you know,
almost anything is teachable, and a lot of things in grief, I believe, are teachable. We're talking about human emotions. We're talking about something that every one of us, and I mean, I like to joke and say probably the only people who don't deal with emotions are sociopaths, but we don't talk much about them. But I mean, we're not talking about putting a rocket on the moon. We're talking about being there for someone to deal with somebody's emotions, mm-hmm. to help somebody through their loss and their grief. And if you know how to put a rocket on the moon, then get a job with NASA because you have a skill set that can be useful there. But here is something that we really all need to learn about. There needs to be so much more societal emphasis on grief and loss because we all deal with it. Yeah. Every one of us knows somebody who has died or is going to die. So why not help ourselves? Instead of making it such a taboo topic as it has been for your entire lifetime and my entire lifetime, and even way before that, why don't we embrace it? Why don't we at least consider the possibility that embracing it might be a positive thing?
Yeah. And I think we're getting to that point where you're seeing more death cafes, dinners. We're seeing more informal conversations.
But we are.
We still have a long ways to go.
We do.
It's better than it was. But
it absolutely is. And I love the progress overall that we have made. I have seen it myself. I talk about how when I was in high school, if there was a kid who was in therapy, nobody ever knew it. Yep. And anybody who did, it would be like, oh, well, that family, they're a little, you know, we don't want to talk about them. And nobody would talk about them. Now it's almost cool to have a therapist. And believe me, I believe everybody should be in therapy at one point or another.
As long as you have a therapist.
As long as you have a good therapist and as long as you're willing to have productive, meaningful conversation. By the way, I will say this. Anybody who, if you have not had to go to therapy yet in your life for any experience, if you ever finding yourself needing to go through therapy, do me a favor, do Dave a favor, do yourself a favor, and do your therapist a favor. Be honest. If you're asked a question, answer it. Don't try to skate around it. Because at that point, you're only wasting your time and therapist time and your money. But if you're not trying to productively help yourself, then you're not going to help yourself. So if you're going to go through the process of dealing with therapy, I'm not saying you're going to have it all figured out the first time. It's going to take a minute. And that's okay. Give yourself that grace. Give yourself the chance to open up. You might surprise yourself.
Yep. And if you, and as a therapist, if you don't know the answer, don't make something up.
Oh, No.
And I think it's also important, a type of a relationship that therapist tells, you know, is able to share what resources they're able to provide, what they can't provide. And if they can't provide a certain type of a skill or a service, letting the client know that, look, I'll refer you to somebody on my team who can take care of this, or we're all in this together. That sense of community, particularly with grief, needs to be also modeled, I think, within the therapeutic setting. And the other thing is also a good spiritual counselor or a good holistic practitioner. A lot of times they can help an individual come to maybe greater insight in either separately or in conjunction with a therapist than either therapy or spiritual practitioners alone. There's some spiritual practitioners I've worked with that have gotten me to a place of insight and peace in kind of like a record amount of time, shorter amount of time to talk therapy would get me. And I'm a therapist, but I also look at, there's a place for therapy, there's a place for evidence-based therapy, and there's a place for spiritual practices to come together and to help individuals gain greater clarity. So I could talk to you, we could talk for about another 2 hours. But one of my last questions for you this evening, if you're going to leave our listeners, Nick, with just one takeaway today, what would that be?
Don't be a Jets fan. No, I'm just kidding.
As long as you didn't say, don't be a Yankees fan. I would have had to cut you off.
That's right. We're podcast done. Would have been like, call it. Hello? We're done. Are you there? That's right. We're done. What would my takeaway be? Grief is not easy for anybody. It doesn't matter if it's the first time you're dealing with it or if it's the 15th. It's never easy to deal with. It doesn't get easier to deal with just because you've dealt with it before. And grief is something that you learn to process, you learn to incorporate into your life. It doesn't mean that just because it's been 6 months or a year or 5 years or 10 years or 30 years since the person that you love has passed away, that it's supposed to be easier. You're supposed to get over it. That's not how it works. So give yourself a break and know that grief happens on its own timeline. There is no one single piece of literature that has all the answers. There's a lot of help out there, and not everything is going to work for everybody. So read the books, read all of them, read pamphlets, read magazines, read articles, read what as many as you can. Some of them read multiple times. Talk to therapists. Know that if you reach out to a therapist and if you feel uncomfortable after the first session, unless you're really, really turned off, maybe give it a second session. If you're still not feeling it, maybe look for another therapist. Because like people who try to be there for others who are grieving, I believe that everybody has good intentions. And I think that also can be said for therapists and counselors. I, at one point, had an experience with a therapist who did not jive with, so we found somebody else, and it was amazing. Doesn't mean that he wasn't a good therapist, just doesn't, we didn't click. So know that you need to value yourself and you need to prioritize yourself to do the work that you need to do and get the help that you need to do. Give yourself a break with anything, any difficult situation that you're facing in life. Give yourself the grace that you deserve, because not everything's going to be a quick fix situation. Be there for others. And if you don't know what to say, sometimes it's better not to say anything. And also, you can learn. You can talk to others. You can talk to people who work in the field. You can just have conversations, just one-on-one conversations that don't have to involve a podcast or a microphone or a therapist's couch or a copay or anything like that. These are things that you can and will learn over time. We all deal with this topic. If you have not already experienced a major loss in your life, unless if you die first, you're going to. So wouldn't it be better, instead of just spending all of our time mindlessly scrolling videos and Instagram reels and Facebook reels. Not that I don't love doing that too, but wouldn't it be a little bit better if we could figure out how we can help each other? There is so much good in so many people, and there is so much shit that society has in place currently. And a lot of people, for whatever reason, aren't interested in helping each other, much less themselves. I really wish that that would change. Because, and I'm not saying that there aren't good people, because there are so many amazing people, but I think overall society, we've gotten so far away from trying to help each other and trying to become, instead of becoming a country of 300 million people, we're becoming 300 million individuals. Mm. Try to be there whenever you can for whoever you can. And just choose love. Honestly, that's what is Carl Lewis's message. Choose love. Choose to be there for anybody and everybody in your life, because it's worth it and you're worth it.
Well, you know, to dovetail off of the 300 million individual comment that you made, it reminds me of a lyric from a song called Entre Nous by Rush. And Neil Peart, the late great drummer of Rush, wrote this. And there's a line in there that to me was just so profound. He said something to the effect of, "We need to be islands to each other, building hopeful bridges on a troubled sea." And that, I think, sums up the importance of community to help individuals in that community transcend tragedy.
Without a doubt.
Nick, I know you mentioned individuals could get in touch with you through your ourdads.com website. When they go there, what are they going to find? And also, are there other ways for individuals to contact you?
Absolutely. The website is ourdeaddads.com. On there, you will find a link up at the top. I think it's all the way in the top right. It says contact us. If you want to be a guest, or if you want to nominate somebody else to be a guest, you can fill out the be a guest form. There are a couple of other forms. There's a form that you can fill out if you love the random question segment at the end of every episode. If you have some of your own questions that you want to add to the mix, you can fill the random questions form out and send those in. Every once in a while, when I get enough questions from the listeners, I like to do a bonus episode segment called The Hot Seat, where in the first few that we've done, my wife has been the one interviewing me, but I am put quite literally on the hot seat answering the guests' questions. And I love doing those segments. So if you have questions for me that you'd like me to answer, then fill out the hot seat form and send that in. And don't worry if it's a question that I've already received. It doesn't matter. I will answer it again, because even if it's the 10th time I've been asked, it's the first time that you're asking it. So I love all the questions and I love doing the bonus segments of the hot seat. So please feel free to get those questions in, and I would love to do that. You can also find me on, let's see, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok, I'm on YouTube, though I haven't done a ton on YouTube lately. I'm also on LinkedIn. Those other four I'm very active on. You can either just search for Our Dead Dads Podcast, or the username on all of them is at Our Dead Dads Pod. You will find me anywhere. I also have, you can reach out to my personal Facebook page. Just look for Nick Gaylord. If you find the one that says owner and host at Our Dead Dads Podcast, you found the right one. I'm not hard to find. That's for sure. And I love hearing from all the listeners. I love hearing how anybody can relate to the interviews that I do. Every time I post a reel on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, just seeing the compassionate statements, the stories that everybody else has gone through that can relate to those interviews and those conversations, that's powerful to me. That really means that people are engaging and that people are enjoying the content. If they weren't, they wouldn't bother to reply or even to watch the videos.
Yep.
You can listen to all the back episodes. You can either listen to the episodes directly through ourdeaddads.com, or you can find me on all of the major podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Amazon Music, Pandora. I mean, there's probably six or seven other ones. You can find me all over the place. Like I said, I am not hard to find. Just look for it's kind of a cartoonish logo, like a blue and orange and yellowish background, two ghosts. They've got like ties on, the hats on and the ties kind of look like, they almost look like two old men. the first time I saw the logo kind of reminded me of The Odd Couple. So it's kind of a very retro looking logo, but, you know, wanted something that kind of got the message across, but was also a little bit on the fun side. Because again, this is an intense show, but something that my dad gave me, one of the many things my dad gave me is a fluency in sarcasm and dark humor. And I love to incorporate them into the show whenever possible, as do my guests. So yeah, that's really it. That's how you can find me. I'm everywhere.
And I'll make sure all of that gets in the episode notes when this drops on our episode drops on both YouTube and on my other podcast platforms as well. Nick, thanks so much for spending time with me tonight. I had a great time talking with you as always. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Oh, I think we definitely will. If you're willing to have me, I'm willing to be here. It's an honor and a privilege to be here with you, Dave. And seriously, thank you so much for having me. Thank you to your audience for listening, for putting up with me. And seriously, it's so great to see you again. And yeah, if you're up for it again, you just let me know when and I'll be here.
You got it. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.